Welcome to Life Stories, a Save the Children podcast bringing our supporters closer to the work that they make possible and reflecting on the impact that we can all have on children's futures around the world. This is brought to you by the Gifts in Wills team, for our very generous supporters who have left a gift in their will, and of course for those who may still be considering this. Today, we are talking to Rosie and Margaret about seeing Save the Children's work firsthand in India and Tanzania, respectively. And we'll be talking a bit about the opportunity to visit our programmes, how this affects how they now see our work, and we'll also be hearing a few stories from the field. My name is Isabel, and I am, for want of a better word, your host today. I work in the Gifts and Wills team at Save the Children, and you'll be hearing from a different one of us for each episode of this podcast. But as our pilot, this is me seeing you through the first episode. Our role as a team is ultimately to inspire you and keep you informed about anything relating to Gifts and Wills. And hopefully today we'll be doing just that with some really inspiring chats with Rosie and Margaret. So Rosie is our Regional Legacy Manager for the North of England. Hi, Rosie.
Hello, both. This is very exciting.
And Margaret is one of our supporters and a pledger who has very kindly left us a gift in her will. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, everyone. And it's my first time with a podcast, so I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, mine too. It's fine. We're all in the dark together here. Don't worry. I will start with a question that we're aiming to ask every guest on our podcast. As you know, we'll talk about the very broad range of work that we carry out at Save the Children and the children that this empowers. But we are part of the Gifts and Wills team, so some of what we talk about will relate to this type of fundraising. And I just wanted to ask you, why you think Gifts and Wills are important, either to you personally or to Save the Children as a global movement. Rosie, let's start with you.
Thanks, Isabel. So, obviously, Gifts and Wills income is incredibly important to Save the Children. So last year we had a phenomenal amount that came in, around about 21 million. I suppose when people hear that, they might think, well, that's amazing. Why do we still need to do it? Quite simply, it's because, well, we've been here for the last 100 years. There's always a need for us to do the things we're doing. We don't know what we're going to need to do in the next 100 years, but we know we're going to need to be there. The income that comes through Gifts in Wills is actually what something we call unrestricted income, which means it's not tied down to any particular product or project or service. It allows us to deploy those funds where they're most needed, when they're needed. So they allow us to be very, very flexible as an organisation. Personally, I really believe in it. I've worked in this world for sort of 8 years now. The best description I ever heard was that it's your opportunity to leave your footprint on the world. Whatever our lives have been, there's always somebody that's going to be better off than you, or was somebody worse off than you in many ways. But I think a gift in a will is a wonderful way to readdress that balance and to appreciate the haves and have nots.
Comprehensive answer.
It is, isn't it? It doesn't leave me much to say, really, to add to it. For me, as a donor, it's about being able to contribute after I've gone. That will give communities maybe a hand up for the longer term and their sustainability, I think.
Yeah, so it's the longevity of it, I suppose.
Yes.
Well, yeah, the kind of focus or theme of this podcast specifically is less just about Gifts and Wills and more about seeing the work in the field. So for us today, specifically India and Tanzania. So Margaret, you obviously visited our programmes in Tanzania in 2017, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right.
And so I suppose it's more about asking just if seeing our work firsthand impacted how you feel about Gifts and Wills, and kind of how much what you said about Gifts and Wills is informed by what you saw in Tanzania.
Yes, I think what it did, it reinforced things for me about the importance of the work that Save the Children does, and maybe helped also to clarify how things work in the field. So, for instance, finding out how the country offices operate in conjunction with the government, you know, how we kind of have a seat at the top table, I think is really important, because that way you are working towards something where you're unified with the politics of the day. And I was also interested to see how the project workers interface with the local communities, and particularly how Save the Children's focus is about asking children, what the issues are before the projects are determined. So it's not a case of, well, we think you need this, we're going to go and deliver it.
Yeah.
It's what are the issues facing you, young people, and how can we work with you to improve your situation?
And I suppose that will change how you see your gift being used, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Margaret, you took part in our 2017 overseas visit to Tanzania.
Yes.
Which was with the Gifts and Wills team. And to kind of provide a bit of context, this is an annual opportunity that we have to bring our most committed supporters, some of whom have included Gifts and Wills, closer to the work that they're helping fund and sustain. And in exchange for this opportunity, our supporters go on to become legacy ambassadors. And these ambassadors help us share the values and impacts of Gifts and Wills with our wider supporters, both at regional legacy events and also through speaking to their own local community groups, or indeed by contributing to other fundraising work. Our ambassadors have actually, I think, reached over 500,000 people with our message about Gifts and Wills. So we really do rely on you a lot. Thank you very much again. And also, obviously, we wrote them into things like pilot podcasts. So, Rosie, obviously, you are a regional legacy manager in the north of England, and you work very closely with a lot of our legacy ambassadors. Presumably, you see the value of their work firsthand as well.
Completely, Isabel, yeah. So I've been with Save the Children for a year and a half now, and I've delivered 7 events. And these events are all about getting out in front of regional supporters, talking to them about our work and then the value of Gifts in Wills, mm-hmm. and making the ask of them if it's appropriate. You really can see the benefit of a peer-to-peer ask at events, mm-hmm. where somebody that is not paid by a charity, not employed. I am hugely passionate about Gifts in Wills, but I am very conscious when I'm talking to people in a professional setting that they are aware that I'm being paid to attend an event and deliver and speak and make that ask. I think that if you can present, I won't call them ordinary because I don't believe that anybody that leaves a gift in their will is really an ordinary person, but if you can
Relatable, accessible kind of person.
If you can present an audience with somebody that is just like them, that may have children, grandchildren, that has been on whatever journey with their charitable giving, if you can present somebody that has taken the decision to leave a gift in the will, I think it's invaluable to hear that emotion, the justification for doing so, and even better if somebody has been overseas on a trip and witnessed the work that has been delivered as a result of those funds. All for the greater good. You know, you cannot, you just cannot match the emotion of playing a video in comparison to actually asking somebody to explain what it was like to visit a local primary school, wherever it be, Mozambique, India, wherever, and to actually relay the look on people's faces and seeing the joy of children appreciating that somebody from another country has come over to see. To see the benefit of the work that we've delivered. So it's second to none. You can't top it.
And is that how you feel as well, Margaret, when you get the response you get from kind of speaking at these events?
Yes, I think the audience always feel it's good to hear firsthand from somebody who's in that situation.
Yeah, because you were at one of our events in Oxfordshire recently,
yes.
weren't you?
Yeah, Blenheim Palace. Yes, and that was my first time of doing a formal speak out session. Mm. So I'd prepared my presentation very carefully. I was quite nervous, but actually it all was received very well. So that's kind of spurred me on for the next time.
And of course, Rosie, you are one of the lucky people who's now taking our next group of would-be ambassadors on this year's overseas visit to India.
I am, yeah.
If that feels at all real, yeah.
No, it doesn't. It still feels very surreal. And when I found out that I was going, I actually didn't tell many people. I think most people's reactions would be phone their friends, phone their family and say, guess what I'm doing? But I almost expected it not to materialise because it's so far removed from anything I've done. And again, I was saying to you earlier today that I've printed all the documents and I have them in a folder. And sometimes I take them off to bed with me and I have a quiet little read and I go off to bed thinking I'm half terrified, half absolutely elated. I can't articulate really what I'm feeling other than privileged is the wrong word because I think that suggests a bit of voyeurism, which isn't the right thing to convey. But in some senses, I do feel privileged because I'm an ordinary person going to see some extraordinary things taking place. And, you know, I feel immensely proud to work for Save the Children and I'm sure that's going to increase tenfold by the time I come back. And, yeah, to be taking a selected group along to share that experience, I just think it's going to be one of my top life moments, to be quite honest.
Yeah, because spending time with supporters anyway is always enjoyable. It's always nice when you work for a charity to actually, yeah, spend some face-to-face time with the people that make the work possible.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate to be going along.
And, of course, Margaret's here to offer you any sage words of wisdom for how she found Tanzania.
I noticed you were nodding at me when I was talking, so yeah. I guess you felt the same.
Absolutely. It was an adventure, but you have to put it in the right context. It's not a holiday. Mm. Be prepared to be shocked by some of the things you see, I think. The gaps in infrastructure that these countries have, you know, we just are so fortunate here in the UK. And it maybe sometimes takes a visit like this to make us fully appreciate what we have. It is humbling, and I know you kind of, some of the words we use, like privilege and humbling, they're difficult, aren't they? Because people can read them out of context. But it is humbling to see how people appreciate what has been done for them and their communities that may seem fairly small, common sense things to us. You know, we saw some ladies who'd been taught how to run a loan and savings club, and they were just so empowered. It was marvellous to watch their enthusiasm and what they'd done with the money that they'd earned from their investments in crops and raising chickens and selling eggs and things. They'd bought their grandchildren bus fares and school uniform. Women don't have a huge voice in some countries, I think, in terms of being in charge of finance. So it is very empowering.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll see similar things in India.
I think my approach to it is that I want to kind of go as a blank canvas or a sponge, whichever fits. It's so far removed from anything I've ever done. And a couple of people have said, I'll be prepared for an assault of the senses. And I think that's probably the best phrase I've heard yet, for good or bad. I want to be a little unsettled by it because I want to come back and have had my button reset, if you know what I mean. I want to feel fully grateful of what I have. But I also want to be pleasantly surprised by seeing the impact of the work that we're doing. You know, I actually want to see those reactions on the faces.
Margaret, did you have a surprising moment that, like, what your kind of the biggest surprise was of the visit or anything?
I don't think they were huge surprises. I mean, I had been to Africa before, so I think I was maybe less immediately surprised at some of the way of life. Although it does help to have things reinforced how many people actually live hand to mouth, literally. So if mum and dad haven't earned enough money today, the family won't eat tonight and the children will go to school hungry or not go to school because there's no bus fare. And it's literally as simple as that. But I do think it's important to go with an open mind, yes. You might have an area that you have particular interest in. My area, because of my work in industry, was about leadership and management. So I was particularly keen to see how things were working more at a strategic level. And that, you know, heartened me, I think, to see how credible the charity is. It is a fantastic shared experience, something that will stay with you for a long time.
Is there anything you're particularly looking forward to? I know you've said that you can't really imagine it, but...
Well, I do live in Manchester, so the colour I'm looking forward to, the lack of grey. I think I'm really probably most looking forward to seeing the children because all footage I've seen in previous trips or photographs, the smiles are just, they knock you out, so I'm prepared to be knocked out.
Obviously, we've talked a bit about how your experiences will differ, but I think it's worth pointing out as well that partly this is because of the programmes in Tanzania and India. We don't want to sound like we're conflating visits to two very different countries. So India is obviously, you know, a global centre for technology and finance, but it also suffers from a huge gap between the wealthy and those who are living in poverty. And I think statistics at the moment have 12% of all children are engaged in child labour in India. And 20% are not in school, and that's of children who are of school age who should be in school. And crucially, as in a lot of countries, this poverty is also genderised. So if a family can't afford to send their children to school, it's often the girl who loses out. So we're also working with communities in India to ensure that girls have equal opportunities and to prevent issues like child marriage. And I know that that's a big feature of your itinerary, Rosie, as well, is kind of seeing these programs that help support women's and young girls' rights. Mm. Meanwhile, in Tanzania, the statistics are actually even worse. So especially child mortality rates of children under five. I think what I also found really shocking was that only 16% of Tanzanian children are currently registered at birth. So it's actually even harder for us to identify and help those children that are in need in terms of just locating them. And that's particularly true in rural areas compared to the urban areas. So our priorities, especially in those hard-to-reach rural areas, are, I think, children's rights and welfare. Margaret, it's what you kind of said about helping them not just survive, but then also thrive. So obviously the work that you've either seen or will see is incredibly empowering. And I think it's great how many times that word's actually just naturally come up, because that sounds like it really kind of centres the children that you guys will be seeing. But what do you both think is actually kind of the best thing about being able to offer these overseas visits to our supporters?
I think it provides a real context for the charity's work. I was really surprised, actually, how many different income streams there were. We saw projects funded in many different ways. The one in Umbeya, the primary school, it was funded by a German firm of coffee growers, because that's the coffee-growing region. So it was like a corporate social responsibility sort of activity.
A corporate partnership or whatever.
And I hadn't realised that funding came in all these different ways. Mm-hmm. Or even really that there are Save the Children offices, organisations in many countries. So the Zanzibar project team was run by a Swedish lady. Very, very, what's the word? Assertive lady who had done some fantastic work with the government in Zanzibar.
Yeah.
Huge issues there about abuse of children. And she had helped to set up a child centre where they can go and report crimes. Mm-hmm. And it's the international standard.
Like a safe space for these children to go to.
Yes.
I'm not going to pretend to be able to name all of our member countries or country offices, because there are hundreds of them. But yeah, it is true that Save the Children UK is a very vital part, but of a much bigger global organisation, all of which can be found on our website.
The visit helped me feel a bit less remote, I think, than removed from the giving. We have lots of publications. You know, you do send out all sorts of information to help us understand, as supporters, where the money goes. But it means so much more when you've actually seen it face to face.
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that. I think when I joined the Save the Children, I was incredibly astounded by how much of the money we raised actually goes back in terms of service provision. People might say, well, hold on a minute, there's clearly a cost attached to sending people overseas, wherever it be, to see these projects. Is it really necessary? I do think it's necessary, because I think it's about transparency. Lots of organisations offer the same opportunity. It just so happens that we are an international organisation that have offices all around the world. So removing that element, I think, is it really any different to perhaps going along to your local animal sanctuary to see how your donations from a coffee morning have been raised? It's not about great big values of money and the cost of things. It's about being transparent and about saying to somebody, this is what it looks like. This is why we need to exist. This is what your gift can solve or help alleviate. I genuinely think it's the right thing to do. It will empower me as a member of staff to make sure I convey the ask in the right way, and I positively use the emotions and the things I've learned instead of relying on third-hand footage or photographs. I think it's just, as I say, about transparency and the right offering to make to our supporters.
And yeah, and authenticity, because there's something a lot more authentic about what you're saying if you can say, honestly, I know I've seen it. There's whether you're a supporter who's offering, like we said, that kind of peer-to-peer perspective, or whether you're a member of staff, being able to say you've seen it firsthand is much more genuine and authentic either way. So you obviously have different perspectives as member of staff versus supporter, and as, you know, very experienced Tanzanian traveller and, you know, India novice. But kind of pre and post visit, what would you say to someone who's thinking of applying to one of our overseas visits in the future?
We're all human, aren't we? And when I approached working in this sector, I definitely went at it with a mentality of there but for the grace of God go I. You know, I think that working for a charity is a wonderful thing to do because it allows you to appreciate what you have, but also what potentially other people have not. I think that really it's just an opportunity to see a universal being, really. You know, as I say, we're all human, and just appreciate that, that's at the most basic level. We come into the world with nothing, we go out of the world with nothing, and what happens to us in between is, for all intents and purposes, not always our decision. And if we are on the luckier side of the fence, why not try and help those on the other side of the fence?
What I would say to anybody thinking of applying is go ahead. Have an idea in mind, though, of how you might want to give back something afterwards. I think I was always conscious that the trip is funded by the charity,
yeah,
and that I felt I should be giving back afterwards something that might be at least equivalent to the money that had been invested in me. In fact, I think it was part of the application process to say how we might spread the word afterwards.
Yeah.
Be prepared for a humbling adventure, but be prepared to give something back.
And I think, yeah, what we want back is you, in a way, whoever you,
yes,
is that goes. We don't necessarily want the all singing, all dancing, PowerPoint, film footage, mm-hmm, photographs. What we want is that real testimony,
yes,
is to give something of yourself, you know, share that experience, whatever that means, whatever that looks like, however upsetting at points it may be. We want it to be human. We want you to go with an open mind, an open heart, and bring it all back and share to hopefully inspire others to think along the same lines that a gift in Wales is a wonderful thing to do.
We've reached over, I think it's 600,000 people we've reached with our various talks and events and everything else. And that's a huge, huge thing to have given back between all of our various legacy ambassadors over the years. I think our supporters who have been on these visits have raised over £10,000, mm, in their own fundraising activities, and kind of by supporting at events and everything. So I think, yeah, we are very, very lucky to have really committed supporters who want to give back and who feel, just as you said, Margaret, that, mm-hmm, there's an investment here, and I both have a moral obligation but also have a personal desire to make good on that and,
yes,
to do whatever I can with that. But I think Rosie's right as well. Making good on that can just be as simple as your authentic feelings about your, mm, support for the charity and what you've seen.
Absolutely. I think it's important that we use our own networks.
Yeah.
I've been absolutely amazed at how many of my friends and other family members haven't made a will.
Yeah.
You've got to start somewhere, so never mind a gift in a will.
Yeah, your chances of including a gift go up if you actually write a will. That's worth pointing out.
I would urge people to think about it. Sensible, intelligent people in my circle who have families haven't made a will.
And also a lot of people who are interested in doing so and just don't know enough about how to do it or when to do it. Or it's a really natural conversation to have with some people. I was talking to some friends of mine at a wedding recently, which is really not cool.
But I think they're the people that we miss in the statistics that,
yes,
you've quoted earlier. That doesn't allow,
yep,
for our personal networks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've shared my visit, obviously, with lots of friends and family since I've been back.
Yeah.
And they, in turn, will be passing messages to their circle.
Yeah.
That's it. And how much more powerful is that than, not saying that anything we print in a magazine wouldn't hit the spot, but, you know, you could equally say, oh, I've read this, have a read of that, it's really interesting. Might not get read, might not make the same impact. Certainly it's not as much impact as you talking over a coffee or lunch and just say, telling the tale of a particular child you remember or a member of staff or a particular scene that you saw when you got out of the airport. And you, those are the moments in life that you don't forget.
That's really, really true. And that actually leads really nicely onto what my last request for our podcast was going to be, which is, obviously, as you know, this podcast is called Life Stories, just like our biannual magazine that goes out to people who have left gifts in their wills. And it's designed to share our work with our supporters. But it's called Life Stories because we're sharing and collecting stories from our supporters and, arguably more importantly, from the children that we all support together. And because a gift and a will helps children write their own life stories in this way for years and years to come. So we think this is a pretty powerful message in terms of a kind of symbol for what we're all trying to achieve. What I wanted to ask you, Margaret, is what one story you would choose to share today after everything we've talked about Tanzania?
It has to be from the primary school, I think,
okay.
In the southwest of the country that we travelled to. The project was about addressing the children's issues that I think I've mentioned earlier about hunger and lack of attention in school. So there's a big issue of what we call here corporal punishment, mm-hmm. but Save the Children calls physically humiliating punishment. Mm-hmm. And one leads to another. It's kind of cause and effect. If you're hungry, you're not going to pay attention, and so you might fall asleep in class and then you get hit. The project was multifaceted, really. It included upskilling the teachers so they could make their lessons more interesting. It included sorting out a lunch club where parents would contribute food and the children would then be able to have something to eat in the middle of the day. You know, it was kind of multifaceted. But the children then produced some entertainment for us. They'd obviously been working really hard on this. Aww. And it was amazing. There was a particular girl, a little girl, who did a bit of play acting. She was the teacher in the classroom. And she was going around, the children had got their heads on the desk or whatever, and she was going around with a stick, hitting them. And she'd obviously got mum's or auntie's high heels on, you know, so she was trying to be, yeah, she was a real character. And then later on, she led a group of dancers who performed for us. And she got a whistle and she was kind of, you know, giving directions to them. So I thought we have a real leader in the making here, and I just hope that she's able to exploit that potential.
Absolutely. What a note to end on. Thank you both very, very much for coming today. Thank you for your time and for sharing your thoughts and stories with us. And as I said, for being our guinea pigs for our first pilot podcast for Save the Children Gifts and Wills team.
Anytime.
Indeed, you're very welcome.
If everything you've heard in the last half an hour or so has inspired you to apply for our next overseas visit in 2020, or if you have any other questions about the visits, then obviously please feel free to get in touch. Invitations normally go out in early summer, but we'll keep a record of your interest in advance and we can make sure you're one of the first to know where and when we're planning to go. You can email us at giftsinwills@savethechildren.org.uk or you can call us on 0203 763 7500. You can also subscribe, rate and review this podcast. We'd love to hear your thoughts on what you'd like to hear on future episodes. And of course, hopefully sometime, Rosie, you'll come back and join us again and tell us how it was in India and you can share your experiences from the other side.
Love to.
And that's it. Thank you again for your own unique support of Save the Children and for listening.